Welcome to Straight Talk with your host, Patty Foster.
With me today on Straight Talk with Patty is Police Chaplain Harold Elliott. So today he's going to talk to us about his line of life, from one point to another, all he's been a part of and gained in his life journey. So King Harold, as I call him, share with our listening audience about being a pioneer in police chaplaincy. You've been a vital part of Arlington Police Department, of the international chaplaincy and the role and the leadership. Tell us about being a pioneer in police chaplaincy.
Thank you and greetings. Being a pioneer has its advantage, and that is you're not necessarily the first, but you're among the first. There were some 25 full-time chaplains when I became a full-time chaplain, but I had 8 years of volunteer service prior to becoming full-time chaplain in 1982. I actually joined Arlington, Texas Police Department in July of 1975 as a volunteer with no idea any whatsoever of what a police chaplain was supposed to do, except having come out of 30 years of pastoring overall. That was when I went full-time. I had 30 years, and I just knew the meaning of ministry was to minister to the needs of individuals, whoever they are, whatever the need, to the very best of my ability. Being a pioneer had its advantage in that I didn't know what I was doing, and no one else in authority knew what needed to be done. So I was given the opportunity to form the chaplaincy as I felt it should be. And my mistakes were often not recognized, and the achievements were. And so I came out winning on that opportunity that was given me. And then in 1982, I went full-time and retired from the pastorate, and still was a pioneer full-time chaplain, because there were, as I said earlier, only about 25 in the U.S. at that time that I was aware of that were full-time chaplains. It's a great life, great life.
Wonderful insight. And pass along to us about the importance of humor.
Humor, well, Scripture says a merry heart does good like a medicine. And humor can often be found even through tears. And it often is found through tears. And probably the last thing I would have ever imagined would have been to share humor with someone who was grieving. But in my ministry, in chaplaincy, I found so many times that if something humorous could be mentioned or just brought to light, that the person who was grieving, if they could only laugh out loud or even smile for just a moment, there was relief. But there also was humor relief for me. It's sometimes what police call dark humor, and that's humor not laughing at or about something that has happened, but laughing about things that are around us, incidents that happen. I think probably the best example that comes to my mind is having worked a situation where a young man drowned himself in a creek, and I went down an embankment in daylight. When I came up out of the embankment, there was a light shining in my eyes. I could hardly see my way to the top. I just knew it was one of the police officers with his strong flashlight, just aggravating. But when I got almost to the top, I did a very foolish thing. I said, da-da-da, and it was a TV camera. And now here I am on film. I said to the cameraman, sir, you know I'm not a violent person, but I could become violent if I ever see that on television. He promised me, and he lived up to his promise, never ever to show it. So humor has been my salvation in some very critical times to leave a scene that is just heart-rending. And if I can find anything that will bring humor, then it's like a good dose of medicine.
And so often a good dose of medicine is used when a family goes through some kind of a traumatic suicide incident. And you've done a lot of research about suicide throughout the years. Share with the listeners some of the key points through your research and interviewing and writing that you've discovered.
Well, I've found that we have our little formula written out as to why people take their own lives. And I, early on in my full-time chaplaincy, I formed a unique interest in suicide. And with that interest came what caused it. You know, why did they do it? Why did death become preferable over life? And were they, as one lady said of her father, he took his life because he was too strong to be weak. And so he took his life because his business had failed and his health had failed. And so all of those things, they come by the baskets full. And what causes people to reach that state in their life? And I don't know. I've watched it. There are many causes. But what are the signs? What are the causes? And what can you do to prevent a suicide? There are things that can be done to prevent many. And I began by, first of all, counseling on every opportunity those that I knew were suicidal. I followed up from there to producing two films on suicide, professionally done, not just with a hand camera, but a professional crew. And then I wrote a book on the subject, and then I turned it over to God and the people, and they can do with it as they please. And hopefully God has used it, and I know that he has. And so every life saved, and I just give testimony to it and proof with this one thing. I was on a plane and coming back from some trip into Dallas-Fort Worth. As the plane was descending, my seatmate was a young man, turned to me and said, "Is your name Harold Elliott?" I said, "It is." He said, "Did you produce a film called Suicide Is Not Painless?" I said, "I did." He said, "I saw that film when I was in school. I was in high school. I was contemplating suicide. I already had my plan. And I saw that film, and I said, that's not what I want to do. And so I am alive today because of it."
Powerful testimony to give you confirmation of all you've done. King Harold, if someone would like the book or the film that you've put together, is there any way they could get a copy or get in contact?
There are, and I bought up all the copies when it went out of print of the book. And then the film, as I said, I made two films. And it's ironically, I have one on a 16 millimeter. I have one on a Beta, a VHS. And then all of that was transferred by a company over onto a DVD. So I still have those, and I can be contacted for those. And I have a few, not a lot, but I have a few still available.
So if they wanted to contact you, how would they go about that?
I would suggest that you just would write me a note. I can be reached literally by probably the easiest way is to go on the computer and find my name and information. Or Amazon normally carries this material, and it'll be available through them.
You've talked often about the power of presence. Pass along your insight to us.
Perhaps the best example that I know is one that's very personal. It was in January 1995 that our youngest daughter died tragically. Police officers came to our home. They came in droves, but there were three that came and stood in my breakfast room. Each of them had bags of goods such as paper goods, soft drinks, but one had a large bag that was filled with rolls and rolls of toilet tissue. Now, I've been in ministry since I was 14 years old. It never occurred to me, not even once, to take toilet tissue to a family that was grieving. But here are three police officers bringing items that are necessary. But just their presence was one thing. But what they brought was even more important to me at that moment, especially the one that had the toilet tissue. I remember thinking they loved me so much, they thought of the most basic need we will have in this family during this time of grief. There will be hundreds of people coming through this house, and they have come prepared to meet that need. With the rolls and rolls of toilet tissue, the most basic need had been met. So you had the presence of people who cared, and they brought with them the most basic of needs. And it didn't stop there. I moved into another room. Sitting on the hearth was a young lady. Her husband had died in the line of duty. He was one of our officers. I had nurtured her through his death. And people were handing me all sorts of food and saying, "You've got to eat. You've got to keep up your strength or you'll be sick." Well, truth was, I had no appetite. I was not hungry. I could not eat. She took me by the hand and said, "Drink plenty of water." And I thought, how simple. After time had passed by a few weeks, or perhaps even months, I began to put all of that together and realized the value just of their presence. They cared enough to be here. They cared enough to bring what they felt was the most important. Some of it was information. Some of it was goods. I always wanted to write an article. Somehow, even though I've written so much, I just never have been able to write this. I call it Toilet Tissue Ministry. You don't have to take a ham. You don't have to take a cake. You don't have to take a pie. You don't have to take a turkey. Just, first of all, take yourself. That's the most important gift. You don't have to say anything. Sometimes better off if you don't, because sometimes the wrong thing is said. So your presence is the greatest gift that you'll ever give anyone. And then, on top of that, is what do you take? Perhaps it is toilet tissue ministry, something very simple. I must say, don't say to them it's okay, for it isn't. Don't say foolish things like, you're young, you can marry again, you'll have another baby. All of the foolish things. If saying nothing is the best you have to say, that's probably best. Your presence, the power of your presence. Then what is it? Well, in chaplaincy, we have a definition that chaplaincy, especially in law enforcement, chaplain is the best for which I can speak, that the power of our presence is our going where the need is, going where the church either it cannot or will not go, and meeting the need on the spot at the time, perhaps in a non-evangelistic manner, but meeting it with love.
Let's wrap up our time together so you can pass along to the listening audience what you have discovered that really matters to you along this journey.
The important thing is obviously God first, but then family, taking care of family, loving the family, being loved in return by the family, and then forming a family of associates outside of your blood relationship. And I have been privileged to do that through the church and through the police department, to have a family that we are as close as if we were blood kin, and they take care of me. And I have found that very seldom do I ever look back on something and see it as I caused that to happen and it was good. But occasionally I am reminded of the passage of Scripture, their works do follow them. And so there is a line from the date of my birth to the date of my death, and that is my life, and that is my legacy. And I am still alive today, and so how dare me even think about bemoaning this time? Just thank God that I have some time left to still touch another life. And in what way? Very simply, just love one another, for God is love. I have discovered the necessity for meeting the needs of people at the time that the need exists, not putting it off until a later date. Like everyone else, I have made that mistake through my lifetime. I had an occasion to visit a man who was dying with cancer, a very dear relative, and I was within blocks of his house, and I was tired, and so I thought I'll go back later. Well, the next time I saw him, he'd already gone on to glory. And so I learned, don't do that. Don't put it off. In my case, now, I have reached another plateau in my life, and that is that I am suffering from a non-curable disease, which is known as fibrosis, pulmonary fibrosis. And I know what the inevitable end is, but it is amazing at the people who have come to my home through cards, through telephone calls, and then just so many who have prayed for me, knowing that I will not recover from this on this earth. But as I often say, I know I'm at the end of the rope. I just don't know how long the rope is, but God does. There was a time for me to be born. There is a time for me to die. And so if I die today or years from today, it's all right, because God created me, and you can't kill that which God creates. So I will live on forever, and the ministry will live also.
Any closing comments that you'd like to pass along to the listening audience?
I think if I had one quote, with today's society seemingly just has a fixation with hate. And Henry Drummond said, "The world is dying for love." And so loving one another. And what does that mean? It simply means being present in whatever way is best, whatever way is convenient, whatever way is chosen, being there to love and to bless that other person. And just always remembering, like Drummond said, the world is dying for love. And America is dying for love now and wants to be loved, but there is hate. But God is still in control.
Live the love, be the love. Well, thank you, King Harold Elliott, International Chaplaincy Leader, Chaplain of Arlington Police Department, all that you've done. Thank you for being a part today on Straight Talk with Patty.
It has been my pleasure, and I thank you and your listening audience, and I pray God's blessings upon each, and ask you to pray for me that I have continued peace in this time in my life, and that my family also have that same continued peace, and that my police family also share in that peace.
Thanks for listening to Straight Talk with your host, Patty Foster. Patty is a motivational speaker, writer, musician, and has an amazing testimony of God's faithfulness. For more information, log on to www.pattyfoster.com.